herself on. She walked out the doorway of the former Academy Commandant's residence and shook her head at the lead agent, who let us all through, against what was clearly his better judgment. When the agents tried to restrict the welcoming party to me and the officers, I put a quick stop to that with an angry gesture and waved the enlisted people forward. That drew a quick laugh from the president, who had done the exact same thing at the exact same time. And that was the beginning of me and the president hitting it off quite well, which was fortunate for me. Behind us, medical people hurried aboard the dropship to help the wounded crew down the ramp. The president acknowledged Major Sims and other officers, but made a beeline for me, her presence clearing the way without needing to ask people to move aside. The breeze blew her hair across her eyes, and she brushed it away with a well-practiced gesture. "Mr. Bishop." Her eyes were drawn to the unusual unit insignia on my right shoulder. "Is that a Paisley with an eye patch?" Damn it. We had completely forgotten about Skippy's idea for our pirate flag. Now I felt like a complete idiot. This woman was in charge of America's nuclear arsenal. If we still had a nuclear arsenal, that is, things might have changed.
Sort of, ma'am. "It's not a Paisley, it's a paramecium," Skippy said.
"Am I speaking to the being Mr. Bishop calls Skippy?" the president asked, her eyes darting to her advisers who hovered discreetly.
"The one and only. That's me."
"Then Skippy is a nickname." The president smiled at Skippy, then looked at me. "Tell me, Mr. Bishop, what do you call me?"
I momentarily panicked. Commander-in-Chief, ma'am." She laughed.
"That will do, but it's rather long. Madam President will do for now. There is a story behind the paramecium?"
How do I tell the President of the United States that a chromed-plated beer can thinks our entire species, including her, are only slightly more intelligent than bacteria? It would be best to start with some background.
"Ma'am," Skippy cut me off. "It's sort of a joke. Colonel Joe suggested that one of his moderately less stupid ideas meant your species is slightly more intelligent than bacteria. I grudgingly agreed you might be comparable to a paramecium. The jury's still out on that one."
Or I could have blurted it out like a 4-year-old, as Skippy did.
The president took it in stride. I guess years of political campaigns had given her a thick skin. "I certainly hope we will impress you enough during your time here that you may compare us to a higher organism, perhaps algae."
"Good luck with that one," Skippy scoffed, but then added quietly, "I like her, Colonel Joe."
"Thank you." The president managed a quick smile. "What does this mean that he calls you Colonel?"
She addressed that to me.
"Oh, ma'am, it was a field promotion, what the Army calls a theater rank. It was only temporary." I self-consciously glanced at my sergeant's uniform stripes.
"I've restored my uniform to my regular Army rank of sergeant now, ma'am."
My cheeks were burning with embarrassment, and then I had an unhappy thought. Technically, was I back to specialist now? My elevation to sergeant had also been a field promotion by an army that may no longer exist. I had no idea what the regs had to say about this situation. Damn it. I should have asked Skippy. I'm sure he knew all about U.S. Army regulations. Hell, if the army wanted to take my sergeant stripes, they would tell me. I liked my stripes. I'd earned them.
She looked meaningfully at Major Sims, who looked pained.
"I suppose there is a long story behind that, too. Come inside, please. We have food for you."
There was an undisciplined, involuntary moan from the pirate crew, maybe including me, and my mouth watered.
There was another glitch as we filed into the room that had been set up for a buffet. A breakfast buffet. According to Dutchman ship time, this was the afternoon, but my stomach did not care. Real food. Human food. All my blood must have been redirected to my stomach instead of my brain, because I absentmindedly pulled out my Z-phone to check the weather, something I did every morning at breakfast. There was no weather app on my Z-phone, of course. A Secret Service agent saw the thing in my hand, the thing that wasn't holding Skippy, and stiffened.
"Sir, what is that?"
"This?" I waved the Z-phone at him. "It's my Z-phone. The Army calls it a tactical radio. The Krestang supplied one to every soldier."
"Krestang? This is a Krestang device?" the agent said with alarm. "You can't bring a Krestang communications device in here. I have to take it."
I held the Z-phone tightly to my chest in a death grip like it was a football I just intercepted.
I can't do that, sir. I'm not trying to make your job more difficult. You need to understand my phone controls through Skippy here. All the weapons on the Theranan Star Carrier in orbit.
I pointed vaguely at the sky with one finger.
Sir?
The agent clearly wasn't buying it.
What he said, Skippy offered unhelpfully.
He ain't lying.
The agent now really wasn't buying it.
Sir, I'll need to see that device.
That wasn't happening. I'd seen the big red button fry Kristang site across the Earth. No way was anyone getting their grubby paws on my phone. Damn. Before the Ruhar had raided us, what now seemed an eternity ago, I'd been eager to upgrade my old cell phone. Now I couldn't ever let the Z-phone out of my sight. Somehow I needed to find a plastic bag so I could bring the phone into the shower with me. And no, that wasn't so I could watch porn in the shower, you smartass.
Look, Agent, sir, the Kristang can't use this thing anymore. It's safe. Right, Skippy?
100% safe from the lizards. I wiped all their pathetic code off it.
The president defused the situation again.
Agent Thomas, the president called out. Mr. Bishop can keep his phone.
Madam President, we have procedures for a reason.
These two, the president waved a finger between me and Skippy, destroyed the Kristang here in seconds.
It would have been faster if that damn satellite hadn't been over the horizon.
Stupid orbital mechanics, Skippy grumbled.
My point is, if they wanted to vaporize this whole area, a phone is the least of our problems, the president said gently and waved me forward.
Your phone really controls the weapons on that starship?
Yes, ma'am.
It's a, long story.
I look forward to hearing the full story later. In the meantime, I have a country to start putting back together.
She held out her hand, and I shook it in a daze.
I had somehow gone from a farm in Maine to shaking hands with the President of the United States of America.
She looked at my Z-phone closely.
Perhaps it would be a good idea to have a security team accompany you to make sure you don't misplace that phone.
She looked up into my eyes.
That wasn't a joke, Sergeant Bishop.
No, ma'am, I stammered. And, I'll need to find a charger, I said weakly.
No need, Skippy said. I'm keeping it charged.
How? I asked. He'd never said anything about that before.
Unicorns and fairy dust.
Screw you, Skippy, I shot back, before remembering with horror where I was.
Sorry, Madam President.
The President seemed genuinely amused.
Thank you, Sergeant. I think today is the first time I've genuinely smiled in the last year.
Yes. I vowed right then and there to keep my mouth shut whenever I could in the future.
Thank you.
We don't want to take up your time, ma'am.
I look forward to talking with you later. In the meantime, enjoy your breakfast.
She turned to go, but looked over her shoulder at me.
Oh, and Sergeant.
Yes, Madam President.
Thank you for saving the world.
Breakfast was good. Damned good. Major Sims cautioned us former pirates not to stuff ourselves, since our stomachs weren't used to eating real food. I settled for grits, which I put brown sugar and cream in, plus buttered toast and one, no, two, okay, I confess, three strips of bacon. Oh, man, it was all so good, and a cup of honest-to-God real coffee, black, hot, in an Army logo mug. I felt like crying. Two things put a teeny damper on my breakfast. The first was the Air Force Staff Sergeant who showed up right after I sat down. She was only about 5'4", had her brown hair and a short ponytail, but the way she stood, spoke, and the expression on her face told me she was all business. That and her sidearm. Oh, and the four airmen behind her who were carrying M4s.
Sergeant Bishop, I'm Staff Sergeant Kendall. I've been assigned to you to accompany you. Everywhere.
Oh, I managed to say with a mouthful of toast.
You're the security team assigned by the President?
I don't know about the President, Sergeant, but the Air Force Chief of Staff gave me orders personally.
She raised her eyebrow to emphasize that didn't happen every day.
We're to assure the security of you, your phone, she said that with a questioning tone, and the,
she pointed at Skippy, who I had thoughtfully rested in a ceramic bowl on the table in front of me.
The Skippy.
That's me, in all my magnificence, the amazing Skippy,
Skippy said.
So, you're Colonel Joe's babysitter.
Make sure he gets to bed early. He gets cranky if he doesn't get a nice nap. And don't let him have too many juice boxes.
She didn't smile. Not even one little bit. The Air Force apparently hadn't seen fit to issue her a sense of humor.
Great. She was going to be my constant shadow, and even Skippy couldn't get her to smile.
The second damper on my feast was the three guys sitting across the table from me, looking like they couldn't wait for me to finish eating toast. Two were Army Intelligence. The other guy had to be with one of the three-letter agencies, and not the EPA, if you know what I mean. They wanted to jump right in on debriefing me while I savored breakfast. The CIA guy got on my bad side right away.
Sergeant Bishop, any information you have regarding events off-world are considered top secret, and you are prohibited from...
Oh, screw this, Skippy said disparagingly. Hey, you monkeys are all dumb to me, but you seem particularly stupid. Here's a newsflash for you. We arrived here on a Theranin star carrier that uses a Kristang frigate as a spare tire. None of your bullshit supposed secrets down here mean a damn thing anymore, and you just can't stand that, can you?
The only info worth keeping secret around here is in Colonel Joe's head and in my databanks. If you want any info out of me, you can make yourself useful and freshen up Joe's coffee cup.
The CIA guy thought Skippy was joking, which pissed Skippy off.
Hey, shithead! If you dumb, hairless monkeys want any info out of me, you get your lazy ass out of that chair right now and get my buddy a cup of coffee. I don't see you moving.
I held out my coffee cup. The two army guys were about to bust a gut trying not to laugh as the red-faced CIA guy got me a fresh cup of coffee. I took my time with the last piece of toast and talked only to the army guys.
Sirs, what do you want to know first?
After breakfast, which didn't last nearly as long as I'd liked, Skippy had an appointment with a group of scientists, which he had grudgingly agreed to in order to get it over with. I could tell by the tone of his voice that he was not looking forward to being questioned by the equivalent of bacteria, even if some of them were Nobel Prize-winning bacteria.
Oh, this is going to suck,
he grumbled to me as I walked down the hallway to the conference room.
You know that you're too dumb to understand anything about the universe, so you don't ask stupid questions. These pompous monkeys are only going to waste my time.
Shit. Better get this over with.
Skippy had clearly been hanging around me too long. I agreed with him when he got to the conference room. It was crowded with scientists, security people, and audio-video equipment. They had a table set up, surrounded by microphones and cameras. I set Skippy carefully down on the table and wished him luck. Then it was time for my own debriefing down the hallway, escorted by Sergeant Kendall. It was in a smaller room without fancy chairs, and the Army, Air Force, and Navy officers and CIA people there were no nonsense. The CIA guy kept glaring at me. He was still pissed about what Skippy said at breakfast. At least the coffee was fresh and hot. Whenever I took a sip of coffee, I looked the CIA guy straight in the eye. If looks could kill, I'd be dead. Fortunately, one of us had destroyed an entire Kristang battle group, and guess what? It wasn't him. It started with me telling the basics of my story, from the day we departed Camp Alpha. Then they grilled me intensely for details, and not just about Skippy. I told them mind-blowing intel about the Kristang, wormholes, the Elders, everything I'd learned from the Burgermeister. Then they wanted to know the situation on Paradise, disposition of our forces across the planet, status of Ruha, Kristang, and Theranin forces, all of which I knew little about, unfortunately. That didn't stop them from asking me the same questions over and over until I felt like there were grill marks on my backside. It left me feeling that I was letting them down as a military officer. I should have done more to gather intel. How I could have done that, as a prisoner, first of the Kristang and then the Ruha, and then sneaking around, trying to avoid everyone, I didn't know. What I did know was what the Army expected of a colonel, and I wasn't meeting those standards. Except for, you know, the saving the world thing. I was going with that one. During a bathroom break, I was washing my hands next to one of the Army intel officers, a Colonel Landry, who had treated me decently so far. I looked at him in the mirror and asked, "Sir, I told you we got the fortune cookies. We heard what the Kristang were doing to our farmland in the Great Lakes, but I didn't hear much detail at my level. Why is the federal government here in Colorado Springs?"
"You heard there were protests around the world when the public learned what the Kristang were demanding of us?"
Landry paused for me to nod.
When the protests in D.C. got serious and started drawing people from across the country, we brought in elements of the 28th Infantry for crowd control. We were hoping to contain the protests enough that the Kristang wouldn't get worried about it and decide to react themselves. Crowd control meant tear gas, rubber bullets, water cannons, all things the 28th isn't trained for. I think the idea was their strikers would be intimidating to the crowd, but they had the opposite effect. The crowd started throwing bottles and Molotov cocktails at our own troops. We evacuated the President and Congress, at first to St. Louis, then here. There were some incidents, and the crowds got completely out of control. The Kristang advised us strongly to shoot at the protesters. When the 28th refused to use live ammo, the Kristang ordered us, blatantly ordered us, to send the 9th Air Force in to bomb the crowd. When we refused to do that, the Kristang hit Shaw Air Force Base from orbit, wiped the 9th off the map. Then they used some sort of microwave laser weapon, killed half the people in D.C., including the 28th. Things went downhill from there. Landry finished washing his hands and grabbed a paper towel. I could see his hands were shaking slightly. He took a deep breath, like he was trying to make up his mind. There's still a lot we need to know from you. But however you did it, you got us out of one hell of a mess, Sergeant, and the Army isn't going to forget that. Before you appeared in orbit and hit the Kristang, he let out a long breath. We were running through scenarios for NCA, he meant the National Command Authority, and there weren't any good options. The best we were hoping for was some sort of survival for the human race. You got us out of a no-win situation. Don't forget that. I went back to the debriefing, trying to answer the questions as completely as I could. After many hours, the questions got to be repetitive, and I was answering almost on autopilot by this time, when the CIA guy snuck in a surprise.
Sergeant, can we isolate the device?
I'm sorry. What device? Shit, I should have been paying better attention. In my defense, they had been questioning me for 9 solid hours with only brief bathroom breaks and a snack.
The AI. The alien AI.
Well, you mean Skippy? I wouldn't call him a device. He doesn't like that. Now, what do you mean, isolate? Like, ignore him? He's very persistent.
Isolate as in place it in a lead vault, or under Cheyenne Mountain, or inside a Faraday cage. Something that will isolate it from access to outside electronic systems.
He explained in a tone like he was speaking to a child.
Sergeant, you do understand this AI represents a potential security risk.
Look, you don't know Skippy like I do. I've seen him warp space-time and throw a starship jump a third of a light-year off course. And that's what he does as a hobby. You could probably drop Skippy into a volcano, and that wouldn't even make him warm. Or interfere with his ability to fry every electronic system on this planet. It would piss him off. I wouldn't do that.
We have to consider.
Now the CIA guy was pissing me off. No, I already told you. I refrained from adding, you dumbass. Skippy only temporarily disrupted the operation of the local wormhole, and it will reboot or reset itself or whatever in less than a month. If we let that happen, there are going to be some angry lizards coming through and wondering what the hell is going on with Earth. Skippy isn't a security risk. He's our only hope for security. We need to do what I promised and fly back out there so he can shut the wormhole down permanently, lock all other species out. Then we help him find this collective, whatever that is. The CIA guy scowled at me. Apparently we were mutually pissed at each other.
That is a promise you didn't have the authority to make, Sergeant. And now that you're here...
Authority? Where was this jerk when I was having to make the plan up as I went along? Making that promise to Skippy had freed Earth from enslavement by lizards. The Army and Navy intel guys were now giving disparaging looks at the CIA guy and whispering to each other. That made me bold. We're only here because we needed supplies aboard the Flying Dutchman, and I convinced Skippy that our casualties meant we couldn't continue the mission. He took care of the Kristang here because they were in his way. You want to get in his way? Colonel Landry cut in to shut the CIA guy up.
Sergeant, we understand the situation, and it is being discussed at the highest level. Information you are providing to us will inform that decision. Now I'd like to go back to something this,
He checked his notes. This Burgermeister told you. There was alcohol at the reception after the first day of my debriefing ordeal, a substance I hadn't enjoyed since before I left Earth on the space elevator. It was a bad idea for me to order a rum and coke. My thinking was that after a long day being interrogated, I needed something with caffeine in it, hence the coke. The rum just sounded so good I had to go for it. And it was good. Also dangerous. After one delicious sip of the rum and coke, I set it down behind a plant and asked the bartender to give me a club soda with a lime. Sergeant Kendall nodded her approval. I did, after all, have in my pocket the big red button. As long as I had that responsibility, I was on duty 24/7, and I shouldn't be drinking anything stronger than water. People seemed not to know what to do with me, a buck sergeant who wouldn't even be there except for the saving the world thing, which made people feel awkward, not knowing what to say to me. I ended up hanging out by the bar, talking to the bartender, an army private from Texas named Matt. Between his cowboy drawl and my down east twang, we had to speak slowly to understand each other. It made me miss Cornpone and Ski and Sergeant Coke and the guys in my own old fire team, and wonder how they and the rest of UNEF was doing, as prisoners of the Ruhar. I looked around the room and saw a group of scientist types talking and casting glances at me. One of them, a tall guy with longish brown hair, a turtleneck, tweed jacket, and brown loafers, kept smirking at me. He looked like Nerdy Professor Number 5 from any sci-fi movie I'd ever seen. The kind of guy who managed to work a mention of his Nobel Prize into the first minute of every conversation. He was smart and respected, and clearly belonged there as much as I did not. I was jealous, and I instantly hated him from across the room. Then he and his smirky face walked over to the bar. "Can I get you something, Dr. Constantine?" Matt asked. "No, thank you," Constantine said without even a cursory glance in Matt's direction. "I wish to speak with Sergeant Bishop." In my limited experience, when a civilian refers to you by rank, and your rank isn't at least captain or above, it's sometimes done to point out how low you are on the totem pole. This guy said sergeant like it was something he would scrape off his shoe. "I hope you know how fortunate you were to have met the Abe." He pronounced it like Abe, as in Abe Lincoln. "The what?" "AAIB, the Advanced Artificial Intelligence Being. We were directed not to use the term device when referring to it." "You also shouldn't use the term it at all. Skippy prefers he, although I think that's for our benefit. And since we don't have any sort of artificial intelligence of our own, isn't advanced redundant?" Constantine gave me a look that was a combination of his usual smirk and a frown. "Sergeant, I do not appreciate your flippant and, frankly, unprofessional attitude. You had interactions with an immensely powerful being that were inappropriate and dangerous. Dangerous not only to yourself, but to all of humanity. It would be best for everyone involved if you had no further contact with the Abe. You should have brought the he stumbled over his words. "The Abe to the appropriate authorities on Paradise, so qualified people could have conducted the interactions." I coughed and took a sip of my oh-so-delicious club soda and lime. That gave me enough time to restrain myself from punching the pompous jerk in the face. "The appropriate authorities. On Paradise. Which, since you're not up on current events, is our supposed enemies, the Ruhar. Human troops were all being taken prisoner, and by qualified I assume you mean someone like yourself." He nodded. "Qualified, because of your extensive experience with advanced artificial intelligences that were built millions of years ago by aliens who have since transcended their physical existence." "Oh, wait. That can't be you. You have zero experience with things like that." "Who does?" I pinched my chin as if lost in thought. "Now, there must be someone who has extensive close contact with this advanced being. Someone who worked with this advanced being to escape from enemy territory. Captured not one but two enemy starships, vaporized more than a dozen other enemy starships, shut down the local wormhole, and destroyed the Kristang's hold on Earth. Who could that be? You? No, not you. Your continued flippant attitude is exactly why you shouldn't." A set of doors on the far end of the room opened, and a group of officers representing all five uniformed branches came across the room toward me.
I couldn't for the life of me figure out what a Coast Guard admiral was doing in Colorado Springs. Most of them angled off to speak with a guy I recognized as the White House Chief of Staff, but two Air Force guys walked right up to me, carefully pushing a cot that had a thick red pillow and Skippy on top of it. "Sergeant Bishop," one of them started to say.
"Colonel Joe, how have you been?"
Skippy's voice sounded tired, which should have been impossible. Maybe I did need to scrounge up some metallic helium-3, whatever that was.
"Pretty good, Skippy. It's good to see you again. How was your, debriefing?"
I wasn't lying. I had very much missed his irascible self.
"As expected, it was epic, historic, galactic levels of suckitude. Today we truly tested the extreme limit of how bad anything could suck, right down to the quantum level. After being questioned by several of your Nobel Prize scientists, I am reconsidering whether your species is even worthy of me calling you bacteria."
"Damn. You monkeys are dense as a neutron star. Anyway, am I interrupting anything?" I indicated Constantine with my thumb.
"No, I was talking to Smirky McJerkoff here."
"Mr. Bishop, you make my point..." Constantine huffed. "Sorry, I meant to say Dr. Smirky McJerkoff."
"Ah, yes," Skippy laughed. "I had the great displeasure of speaking with Dr. McJerkoff earlier today."
Constantine's ears burned red. I couldn't tell if it was anger or embarrassment or both.
"This is the kind of..." "You hush now," Skippy admonished. "You can't sit at the big people's table and talk to me again until you solve the equation I've just sent to your phone. Run along now. That's a good boy."
Constantine pulled out his phone suspiciously. Then his eyebrows met his hairline. He shot me a look that could have melted icebergs, and he walked away, muttering excitedly.
"What was that equation you gave him?"
Skippy made a raspberry sound.
"Damned if I know. I threw together a bunch of super string bullshit. It looks good, though."
I laughed.
"Skippy, you can be evil sometimes."
Damn. I even saw a little smile on Sergeant Kendall's face. And maybe she did have a sense of humor.
"Hey, it'll keep him quietly playing with himself for days. The expression is playing by himself. It depends how excited he gets, huh?"
That drew a laugh even from Sergeant Kendall.
Chapter 17. Idle Hands. Around midnight, I was able to get to a bunk, a real bed, long enough for me to stretch out. Sleeping in a real bed was as delicious as eating real food. All I wanted was to take my boots off and crawl into bed, but Skippy wanted to talk. Again.
"Oh, man, Skippy, can you let me get some sleep?"
"Joe, I'm lonely."
"There, I said it."
"I talk with you all the time."
"Joe, I get lonely while I'm talking with you.
You speak so slowly, and it takes so long for you to get your point across that it's like I'm waiting by the mailbox every day for a letter that contains a single word. I have to wait another whole day for the next word. When I wait, and I finally get a letter that just says, that day, I feel like screaming.
Damn, I feel like reaching down your throat and dragging the words out you speak so slow."
"Say it, say it! Damn! Get the words out!"
For a moment I got a glimpse inside the real Skippy, the eons of pain he had endured. My own diagnostic system would say I was full-on crazy if I was left alone for a single month. I couldn't imagine how he felt.
"You need more people to talk to."
"Joe, a couple more people aren't going to make..."
"Skippy, there are billions of humans on this planet, and they all think they have something important to say. Unfortunately, they clog up the internet with blogs, vlogs, chats, cat videos, and arguing about sports.
Look, I shouldn't be telling you this because your existence is supposed to be a secret. But if you don't tell anyone that you're an alien AI, nobody gets hurt, right?"
"Billions."
"Yep. Billions. Mostly as dumb as me, but you may find some flatworms out there among the bacteria."
"Doubtful."
"I will consider it."
"Thank you."
I couldn't stop yawning.
"I'm getting some rack time. Don't get into trouble while I'm asleep, okay?"
6 solid hours of uninterrupted sleep did wonders for my mood.
I woke up when a sergeant in Air Force Blues knocked on my door and brought in a tray with a carafe of hot coffee and a mug.
Breakfast in 30 minutes. The shower's down the hall to your left.
Sir. He added the last, even though he could see the enlisted stripes on my new set of uniforms that were hanging in the closet. Oh, that's good coffee. That first sip was like heaven on my tongue.
You slept well?
Skippy asked. Yeah, thanks. Did I snore?
No, not much anyway.
I'm glad you slept well. We have a busy day ahead. He seemed to be in a cheery mood for a millions-years-old lonely AI.
How are you? I didn't hear you snoring either.
I'm good, thank you, he said cheerily.
Beautiful day, huh?
Ah, shit. Skippy being nice to me could only mean one thing. He'd gotten into trouble.
What did you do last night? I asked very slowly.
I took your advice and went on the internet to meet some people.
Some?
So far, 1,108,000,000 in round numbers. I'm currently chatting or texting or emailing with approximately 39 million.
All at the same time?
It's keeping me busy without straining my capacity.
Busy is good.
An idle mind is the devil's playground. I heard that from a fire and brimstone preacher in Idaho last night.
Man, you wouldn't believe the porn he has on his...
I don't need to hear about it. Damn, I just woke up, Skippy. And probably for the best.
Your species really likes pornography, which is impressive for a species with only 2 genders.
Woo, we're number one. I held up an imaginary big foam finger as I gulped coffee.
Yeah, humans kick ass.
The physical differences between your males and females are so slight, it's not even...
Oh, but those differences mean everything. Trust me.
I'll take your word for it.
I imagined he was rolling his eyes in there.
So you've been meeting people online.
And?
Most of them think I'm an asshole, or the equivalent in their native language.
I am shocked.
Don't be an ass.
Sorry.
Are you enjoying meeting people?
Let's put it this way. Have you ever scrolled down the bottom of a webpage to read the user comments?
Aw, man, Skippy. Never read the comments. Everybody knows that. Those comments are all written by guys sitting around in their underwear because they have nothing else to do.
I'll agree with you there, except for the part about the underwear. I turned on some webcams without them knowing about it.
Indeed. I was wrong. Not all you monkeys are hairless. One guy looked like he was growing a shag carpet on his back.
That's a couple petabytes of memory I'd like to have erased.
Hey, speaking of petabytes and other big numbers,
what about it?
Well, this is a funny story.
Uh-oh.
Funny ha-ha, or funny like me spending time in federal prison?
You didn't do anything.
There was actually a defensive tone in Skippy's voice.
They're not putting you in prison, so what did you do?
Well, the internet bandwidth from here is skimpy, even with me compressing my messages. So I reached out to a place that seems to have connections to everything.
Google?
I breathed a sigh of relief.
No, there's a place called Fort Meade, Maryland. It's your national security agency. Some guy there has been tearing his hair out since midnight trying to figure who hacked into their system.
Skippy. My blood ran cold. I felt like throwing up.
Oh, I am in so much trouble.
I was regretting the coffee already.
No, we're good. They think I'm a 15-year-old kid from Fresno named Billy. I gave him a Facebook page and a fake family and backdated a bunch of files.
Apparently there's an FBI team on the way to the Starbucks where they think I'm logged in from.
They are going to be so disappointed.
Hey, I'm watching from the cafe's security camera. Do you want to see?
No, Skippy. You can't do this.
Clearly, I can.
I mean, you shouldn't do this.
See? Human languages are so imprecise.
This isn't funny.
I cracked the door open, sure that heavily armed guards were on their way to arrest me right then.
The NSA has top secret data.
Not to me. I don't care about any of that crap they think is so important.
You didn't tell anyone about anything secret you found?
No.
Come on, Joe, none of that government secret crap is worth my time, but...
Hey... Do you want to know how NASA faked the moon landing?
What?
A joke. I'm joking.
Don't joke like that.
You were joking, right?
I can show you close-ups of the Apollo 11 landing site from sensors on the Flying Dutchman if you like.
I looked at that site yesterday.
Curiosity overcame my fear.
What does it look like?
Your species is way more brave than smart. I take space travel for granted, but your astronauts went up there in tin soup cans. Even I am impressed. You can almost read the Campbell soup label on their landers next to the NASA logo. Man, you monkeys seriously had balls to land on your moon with that crappy technology. Great, thank you. Can you please, please leave the National Security Agency alone? For me?
Why? I'm having fun. I haven't had fun in, like, millions of years.
There are other ways to have fun, Skippy, that don't involve me going to federal prison.
You got out of prison before.
Twice. Can you be serious for a minute? I'm enlisted in the U.S. Army. I can't be part of screwing with America's security infrastructure.
But causing trouble is so much fun, Skippy grumbled.
You want to have fun causing trouble? Go online and start a credible rumor that Justin Bieber is going to play Darth Vader in the next Star Wars movie, I suggested.
Ooh, good one.
I knew there's a reason I hang around you, Joe. Okay, I just put 14 minutes of what looks like pirated studio footage online. I slapped my forehead. Oh, my God. What have I done?
And I released an FDA study that Vegemite works better than Viagra.
Stop it. I'm taking a shower. Try not to launch any nukes while I'm gone.
You know I wouldn't hurt anyone, Colonel Joe.
How about... I shut the door and headed down the hall to the bathrooms, wondering if I had time to buy stock in whatever company made Vegemite. I had never been so nervous in my life. Meeting the president outside, having just descended from orbit in a Theranan dropship with a chrome-plated beer can, made that whole experience so unreal, I'd forgotten to be nervous. Now, wearing a freshly pressed uniform, sitting in a room with the Joint Chiefs, the heads of the CIA and NSA, the National Security Director and Science Advisor, and the President's Chief of Staff, had me dry-mouthed and about to pee my pants. The room was a bit like the Oval Office, with a big desk at one end, two rows of couches, and a coffee table. They sat me on the end of one couch, closest to the chair where the President would be sitting. The Army Chief of Staff, who I'd only seen in pictures before, was sitting right next to me. While we waited for the president, people drank coffee from little china cups that had sauces, I guess so the cups didn't leave rings on the table. The cups didn't have the presidential seal. Those must have been left behind in D.C. Now that I'd sat down and had time to look around, the room didn't appear to be anywhere near as majestic as the Oval Office. In fact, the furniture could have been taken from the lobby of your average Ramada. Or... maybe, as I realized the arm of the couch was worn and had a mysterious stain, perhaps a Motel 6. The Army Chief picked up his coffee cup in a hand big enough to cover the whole thing, and I tried to follow. The cup shook so badly that it made a racket tapping against the saucer, so I set it back down so carefully you'd think I was disarming a live nuclear warhead. The Army Chief, General Brenner, took pity on me.
"Best if you leave the coffee alone," he said quietly.
I had to swallow twice to get enough moisture in my mouth to answer.
"Sir, I've been in combat, and I wasn't this nervous."
The general, who had been in plenty of combat, nodded.
"Stand up when the president comes in, and don't knock over the table. Speak when you're spoken to, and when you speak, be direct. We don't have time for bullshit."
The door opened. A couple Secret Service agents walked in, followed by the president. She looked like she'd been up most of the night. The National Security Director spoke first.
Madam President, I have an update on the security breach at the NSA last night.
The blood drained from my head. I hope no one was looking at me. He continued.
We've contained the situation and we're assessing the damage now. The person we thought was the culprit turned out to be a phantom, a false lead. This was a very sophisticated attack. Probably the Krestang.
Krestang?
Those idiots? No way! It was me!
Came a muffled voice from my Z-phone. Now everyone was looking at me.
Not me, me.
I pulled my Z-phone from my pocket and set it on the table.
Yep, 'twas me, Skippy the Magnificent. Hey, how come I didn't get invited to this party? Sounds like a swinging good time.
Am I to understand the being called Skippy?
The National Security Director shot me an unfriendly look.
Broke into the NSA last night and ransacked through our top secret files?
Ransacked? I left everything where it was.
If you don't want people reading your files, you should have encrypted the data, Skippy grumbled.
They are encrypted,
Really? Oh, I thought those files were just poorly indexed. Huh. That was encryption?
Oh, you're messing with me, right?
Good one. Oh, Jesus Christ, the National Science Advisor gasped. That is state-of-the-art encryption. How did you get the keys?
Keys?
Skippy asked innocently. I decided to end Skippy's fun.
Sir, at our low level of technology, Skippy doesn't bother to decrypt files. He just goes to the end and reads the contents.
It has something to do with Schrodinger's cat. I held up my hands.
Schrodinger's cat. Anywho, what's up, my peeps? Skippy called out.
The president actually smiled. Mr. Skippy, since we apparently can't exclude you from a meeting, would you like to join us?
No, I'm good. I'll phone this one in. That way I can lay on the couch here in my fuzzy slippers and underwear and pretend I'm listening. Besides, I'm watching Wheel of Fortune. And probably all other TV shows that were being broadcast all over the planet at that moment.
I held my hands up again.
I saw that, Skippy announced.
How? The science advisor scowled.
Through the camera on Joe's phone.
Duh.
Also, the dust particles in the air contain ions that...
I better not tell you monkeys about that. It's all very complicated.
Monkeys? What?
The Air Force Chief of Staff started to say.
Very well, the President said.
Mr. Skippy, we have been monitoring the Kristang sites on Earth. Can you tell us the status of their ship in orbit?
Sure. There are two Kristangs still alive aboard the troop carrier. Two more of them survived initially because they were in compartments they could manually seal, but their oxygen has run out, so they're dead. The other two were already in spacesuits preparing to go outside when their buddies got blown into space. By me. Those two have managed to seal doors, restore atmosphere to part of the ship, and they're attempting to gain access to the bioweapons storage compartment so they can launch missiles at you.
Bioweapons? The Navy Chief of Staff exclaimed in alarm.
What kind of bioweapons?
Oh, nothing special. Aerosolized modified viruses. Genetically engineered weapons based on your common cold, flu, Ebola, and Marburg viruses. They're not very efficient yet because the Kristang haven't had long to study your biology. Testing they did at Camp Alpha indicate a lethality within the first week of only 12%, but the lethality goes up to 62% within 1 month. It's the subject's immune system being attacked by multiple viruses at the same time that wears people down and kills them, Skippy said very matter-of-factly.
The room was in an uproar, except for me following the Army Chief's advice and keeping my mouth shut.
The President held up her hands for quiet again.
Mr. Skippy, please tell...
I know what you're going to ask next, so here it is. The testing at Camp Alpha was done on human subjects captured on Earth and smuggled there, not on the military personnel officially assigned there. Military personnel tend to be younger, more male, and more fit than the general human population, so they are not a good representative sample for bioweapons testing. The Kristang kidnapped a cross-section of ages, genders, and ethnic groups for testing on the other side of Planet Alpha from the military facilities.
This is horrifying, the President said quietly, and no one else spoke.
The bioweapons aboard the troop ship in orbit contain enough airborne viruses to kill several million humans in the initial wave. There is only a limited supply of the bioweapon stock, but those missiles are targeted at major population centers such as Sao Paulo, Shanghai, Tokyo, Mumbai, New York, all the usual suspects. A use of bioweapons is strictly against the rules, but the Kristang here figure that Earth is so far from civilization that it's worth the risk, if their situation here got desperate. Like it is now.
How can we stop the Kristang up there from launching those weapons? We still have nuclear missiles, the National Security Director stated.
That ship is in an orbit too high for...
Oh, no need for that, Skippy said cheerily. I sterilized all the bioweapon material aboard the ship and disabled those missiles yesterday.
Oh, hey, I probably should have told you that first, huh?
I slapped my forehead when he said that.
Trying to launch those weapons is keeping those two Kristang busy, and as long as they're happily trying to exterminate your population, they're not causing any real trouble, so I'll let them keep going. At some point, you'll need to send a commando team or something up there to kill them, because those Kristang may get bored and try to overload their fusion reactor. Which reminds me, I...
Huh. Okay.
I just initiated a shutdown of their reactor. It takes care of that problem.
Faces around the room went white as blood drained into people's shoes. I hid my face in my hands.
Skippy, I asked.
How can an impossibly intelligent being be so absent-minded?
See? Skippy asked innocently. This is the kind of stuff you're supposed to remind me of, Colonel Joe. I can't think of everything.
Spacesuits, I mumbled under my breath.
Oh, shut up, monkey boy.
Spacesuits? The President asked.
It's a long story, Skippy said.
The President exchanged a glance with the National Security Director.
Mm-hmm.
Everything seems to be a long story with the two of you.
Skippy,
I still felt like an idiot calling him that in front of the nation's senior leadership. Can we telefactor the robots aboard the Dutchman to take care of those two, Kristang? I couldn't imagine a human commando team wearing bulky NASA spacesuits shooting it out with a pair of Kristang warriors aboard a Kristang ship.
Sure. You're full of good ideas, Colonel Joe.
The Army Chief of Staff turned toward me.
We'll need to get some rangers up to the Dutchman to operate this telefactoring equipment. Telefactoring is remotely controlling Theranan combat robots.
We can provide a SEAL team, the Navy Chief offered, to not be outdone.
Yes, sirs, but it would be best to send some of our pirates. I mean, some of the Dutchman crew back up there. We have experience controlling those robots in combat. Video game skills are more useful than the kind of things rangers or SEALs are trained for, sirs. I was sure that somehow we were going to have Army Rangers, Navy SEALs, Marine Force Recon, and Air Force Special Tactics people aboard the Dutchman when she broke orbit. And probably an FBI hostage rescue team, too, since nobody was going to want to get left out of the action. And those were just the Americans. Things were going to get crowded. We needed to pack plenty of air fresheners. I'd ask Skippy to make a note of that.
The meeting dragged on, with each of the President's advisers given reports on their areas of responsibility, until we got to the issue on everyone's mind, the Kristang on Earth. They had survived because they were in hardened underground bunkers that couldn't be harmed by the weapons Skippy had selected in our initial strike. The only weapons capable of reaching them were either human-built nukes or the railgun aboard the Dutchman. A single tactical nuke wouldn't be powerful enough to reach down far enough in Skippy's estimation. We would need to drill a deep hole, drop the nuke in, and detonate it above the lizard bunker. We had plenty of drilling equipment, although it would take months to get the equipment in place and tunnel down that far. Skippy cautioned that using nukes on a habitable world, including Earth, were against the rules anyway, rules humanity was now bound by as we had participated in the war. If either side of the war ever reached Earth and discovered that humans had used nukes against the Kristang here, the consequences could be dire, as if we didn't have enough trouble already. That left the Dutchman's railgun as the only option, which was a problem at two of the sites. One was close to the city of Lyon in France, the other just west of Hangzhou in China. No way could we use nukes so close to those cities anyway. The third site, their main base, was under a mountain northwest of Durango, Colorado. The President clearly didn't like the idea of recommending the French and Chinese governments evacuate their cities so that Skippy could use railgun penetrators as bug spray.
Mr. Skippy, is there any possibility the Kristang will, after a while, surrender? They must know their situation is hopeless.
No, they don't know that, Skippy explained patiently. I cut off their communications and shorted out most of their electronics. All they know is a Theranan star carrier jumped into orbit, their frigate jumped away, and they were attacked by their own missiles and satellites. As far as they know, this is a commercial dispute between the White Wind clan of the Kristang and the Theranan, which could be as simple as the Theranan being upset about late payments for shipping services. It's happened before. Not on this scale, but the Kristang wouldn't be entirely shocked. The lizards hiding down in the holes are probably figuring they will stay there a while until the Theranan have figured they made their point, or got bored and go away. Then the lizards can come out and resume being bad guests.
Damn it, that's not going to work, General Brenner growled. Any way we can talk to them? Show them how screwed they are?
Sure, if you like. Talking to them won't matter. No Kristang would surrender to a primitive species like humans. It would be unimaginably humiliating. The only reason they would surrender would be in the hope that Kristang ships will come back someday. But if that happens, any Kristang who had surrendered to humans would be executed, and their families back home would be severely punished.
All right, Brenner said. These railgun rounds, what would be involved in their use?
The railgun on the Flying Dutchman was not designed for orbital bombardment, so to punch up the power enough to reach the Kristang deep in their hidey holes would require the railgun to charge up to maximum power. That makes about 40 minutes between shots. The Lyon and Hangzhou sites are not very deep. Two strikes on each site should penetrate deep enough to kill every Kristang in those two bunkers. The Durango side would take three strikes. At Durango, the rounds would act to collapse the mountain on top of the bunker and seal the lizards in permanently. To get all the way down to the bunker would require a half dozen rounds, removing most of the mountain, which I think you won't want, and it isn't necessary. Also, too many hypervelocity strikes would throw a considerable amount of dust into your atmosphere and temporarily alter your climate, like a volcano erupting. Three rounds should take care of the problem at Durango. Each impactor yields 70 kilotons in a shaped charge. The blast effect would be mostly focused downward, but there would be substantial debris thrown out in a spray pattern. Lyon would be affected more than Hangzhou. The president pursed her lips. I need to consider this. She turned to her FEMA director. In any case, begin evacuating anyone within 50 miles. Skippy made a convincing coughing sound. 100 would be better. And there will be a lot of dust and debris in the air downwind. Within 100 miles of Durango, the president continued.
Yes, ma'am, the director of FEMA nodded. People have mostly cleared out of that area anyway after the lizards moved in.
The guy looked completely exhausted. I doubted that he'd gotten any sleep the previous night, or many nights and months. Even the president had dark circles under her eyes, and she looked a lot older than I remembered before Columbus Day. As bad as conditions had gotten on Paradise, life on Earth had been worse. Now I was feeling guilty about the 7 blissful hours of shut-eye I had dreamed away while everyone else had been working. Chapter 18 Ticking Clock.
Is there anything I can do for you, Sergeant Bishop? Kendall asked me the next afternoon.
Nothing. It's an honor to serve, Staff Sergeant. She cocked her head. Clearly she wasn't buying my bullshit.
We all serve in our own way. You saved the world. I talked to my parents on the phone last night, and my father broke down crying. He was so relieved that we're not under the thumb of the lizards. My father is the toughest man I know. He was an Army Ranger, lost a leg below the knee in Afghanistan. They said he would never be able to walk right again. He gutted it out and qualified for infantry duty 18 months later. He qualified and served with half a leg. Toughest man I know, and he was crying, talking to me. He told me he thought we humans were never going to be anything but slaves, if we survived. Now we have hope again. And that is not thanks to anything we did down here. It's because of the miracle of you appearing in orbit and vaporizing those lizard MFers, however the hell you did it. So, she took a deep breath and scowled at me. Sergeant, is there anything I can do for you? I got it. It wasn't about me. I remembered something I'd heard from a guy who had been awarded the Medal of Honor. Wearing the medal isn't something you do for yourself. It makes people awkward around you, and it makes you uncomfortable, and it puts a barrier between the awardee and everyone else. And it's not only the Medal of Honor, it's any medal awarded for valor in combat. You don't wear a medal for yourself, you wear it for the guys who didn't make it. You wear it for your unit, for your service, for your country. And it's not about you, it's about the people who award the medal to you. It's about their need to express gratitude for your actions in a tangible way. Staff Sergeant Kendall needed a way to feel she'd done something, anything for me, to give back for whatever I'd done. It wasn't about me, no matter how uncomfortable I was with attention and ceremonies. I didn't want a medal, and I didn't... An idea hit me like a cast-iron skillet smacking my head. I'd like a cheeseburger, I admitted. I can't tell you how bad I want a cheeseburger. I haven't had a friggin' cheeseburger since I was on the space elevator leaving Earth. The whole time we were in transit to Camp Alpha on Paradise, not a single damn cheeseburger in sight. I'm talking about a real, honest-to-God, all-American cheeseburger, not some fast food thing. A cheeseburger cooked on a charcoal grill in your backyard on the 4th of July. I realized that I was rambling, drooling, but I couldn't help it. A beef patty you make yourself. Not too big, not too thick. Don't pack it too tight so it isn't dense like a hockey puck. Grill it just until it's done, like medium rare. Then you put a slice of cheddar on top and it melts a little so the cheese gets little bubbles but doesn't totally melt. The bun needs to be not thick,
Not one of those Kaiser rolls or brioche things. The bun is just there to hold it all together. It's not the star of the show. Grill the bun lightly, not like toast, just so the bread is slightly crispy. And some grilled onions and ketchup. That's all a truly good cheeseburger needs. Kendall gave me a look I couldn't interpret. Maybe I'd gotten a bit carried away with my burger enthusiasm. Then she nodded, smiled, and I swear her knees buckled just a bit.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. I love a good cheeseburger. Tonight we skip dinner at the DFAC and you come over to our quarters. We're behind the commandant's house. We have a grill. And I'll set you up with a real cheeseburger.
One of the guards with her cleared his throat and Kendall shot him a look.
Yeah, real beef is hard to come by these days, but for you, Sergeant, the United States Air Force is going to make an exception. That's for damn sure. It's the least we can do.
True to her word, Sergeant Kendall brought me over to the building she was quartered in, and out back was a grill. It was mildly chilly in the high-altitude Colorado Springs night, which only means we wore jackets. None of us were going to miss a chance for a cookout. I held the cheeseburger in both hands and inhaled deeply. It was nearly perfect. If it had been cooked by my dad on a grill in my parents' backyard, that would have made it the all-time 100% perfect cheeseburger of all time. But a family connection was the only thing missing. I took a tentative bite.
Oh. Oh, man, that is good.
You have no idea how I've dreamed about this.
Kendall held up her own cheeseburger as a salute.
It's been a while for us, too, so thank you for this. Her team nodded while chewing ecstatically. I was about halfway done eating when I frowned.
What is it? Kendall asked.
Well, I was just thinking the expeditionary force on Paradise may never eat another cheeseburger again. Ever. They should be able to grow enough food, but they're going to be strict vegetarians. Even before the Ruha took the place back, shipments of supplies from Earth had stopped. That meant no medicines either. I hoped the Ruha were better about sharing their advanced medical technology than the Kristang were.
Yeah. Kendall nodded grimly. The lizards didn't tell us anything, but the space elevator stopped working a couple months after you left. It was obvious they weren't shipping supplies out to you. Until you came back, we had no idea what was going on with UNEF. The fucking lizards didn't tell us anything. My brother serves with UNEF. He's with the 3rd Infantry. You think they're going to be all right?
I thought about the Burgermeister and her promises about taking care of the humans on Paradise.
I don't know about all right. But yeah, I think they'll be okay with the hamsters in charge.
Your brother better get used to being a farmer.
Hey. I held up the last half of my cheeseburger. Here's to UNEF. I'm eating this for them.
Hooah! Everyone shouted, and we silently enjoyed our burgers.
Damn, that was good, Kendall said.
Another? She looked toward the grill.
Oh, yeah.
I grinned. Saving the world has its perks.
Rise and shine, sleepyhead.
Skippy announced, waking me from a sound sleep the next morning.
What time is it? I asked groggily.
15 minutes before Staff Sergeant Kendall plans to wake you up.
Then I have time for 10 more minutes of shut-eye.
I pulled the pillow over my head to shut him out.
No way, Joe. This is our private time.
You want to snuggle?
Not even if you were a real beer can.
That hurts.
Hey, you want to know what I did last night while you were sleeping?
Oh, shit. I sat upright and flung the pillow across the room.
What the hell did you do this time, Skippy? Did you get bored and break into the files of other government secret agencies?
Huh?
No, I did that last night when I was reading the NSA's files.
Don't worry. None of the other governments around your world have secrets worth keeping either.
I thought you were busy chatting with people, like all people.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm still doing it. And most of them still think I'm an asshole.
I imagine that. Do you now have a large enough sample size to determine that you are, in fact, an asshole?
The jury's still out on that one.
Considering that it's a jury full of monkeys, I'm going to ignore it.
Anyway, fascinating as chatting with several billion monkeys is, I got bored again and did something useful. I finished downloading all data.
What do you mean, all data?
All the data stored in accessible databanks on Earth,
Duh, it's only a couple exabytes. I can store that in a toenail, so to speak.
Holy shit. I had no idea.